It happens that just yesterday I was obliged to do some final editing on our edition of the Annum Way, the final edition of the liturgical year. So the last week of the liturgical year is the week of Christ the King. And so I have fresh in my mind the readings for the Solemnity of Christ the King, and one of the readings for that feast day is the same, or almost the same, as today's first reading for the Feast of the Transfiguration, the remarkable vision of the prophet Daniel of this mysterious figure, this glorious figure, the Son of Man, who comes on clouds of heaven and receives dominion. Clearly, it's a prophecy of Christ the King. But it's also a prophecy of what the apostles experienced on the mountain of the Transfiguration, this vision of a glorious heavenly figure, the Son of Man, who reigns in glory. So, to me anyway, this feast day of the Transfiguration, which we know is a remarkable event in by any measure, is also a foreshadowing of the solemnity of Christ the King. Christ the King celebrates the second coming of Jesus in glory. So usually we look at the Transfiguration as a prefiguration of the resurrection, the glory of the resurrection. And it is that, of course. But it's also a prefiguration of the final revelation of Christ's glory at the end of time. Well, we're talking about a big event, a very big one, one that goes really beyond the powers of normal human language to describe. Maybe what we can try to do here is, first of all, ponder what happened, and then try to ponder the meaning of what happened, both of which are quite challenging. What happened, and why did it happen? Let's first of all reflect on what happened. We know that Peter, James, and John went with Jesus up a high mountain, traditionally identified as Mount Tabor, but the Gospels don't really say where it is. And suddenly, there's this change. Suddenly, he's as bright as the sun. Suddenly, he's dazzling. Whiter than anything that they could describe. St. Mark says his clothes become whiter than anyone could possibly bleach them. Kind of a practical detailing. As white as you could possibly get, whiter than that. There's different ways to try to explain this. Recently, I was talking to someone who works for a call center. You know, many call center agents, they work all night long and they have to sleep during the day. So how do you sleep during the day? Well, one of the tricks they use is they cover the windows with very heavy cloth and try to get the room as dark as it possibly can be so that the body is kind of tricked into thinking it's nighttime. But what happens when someone walks into the room and opens the curtains? you go from midnight to the brilliance of midday sun, and it's a shock to the body, and the heart rate it suddenly increases, and so that's something like the Transfiguration, from darkness to light, from midnight to midday, suddenly. If you want to use a more ancient example, you might think of Plato's analogy of the cave. You know that story of the people who lived all their lives in a cave, and all they saw was shadows from a fire, shadows on the cave wall. And then one day, someone brings someone up out of the cave into the sunshine. And, of course, you can't see. His eyes are dazzled, and he can't understand what's happening. Well, that's something like Transfiguration, from darkness of the cave to the brilliance of daylight. The problem with both of those descriptions, the call center agent or the man in the cave, the problem with that is that the brilliance in both of those cases is natural sunlight. And in the case of the Transfiguration, well, actually, the Gospels use that same analogy. His face shone like the sun. So the sun is the brightest thing we can think of. That's our experience of bright light. But this is that, but that's a natural light. The sun is, you know, a star that happens to be close to us, and that's where we get our light from, but it's still a natural light. And the transfiguration is a supernatural light. That's why language falters. They're not looking at the sun. I mean, they saw the sun every day. They're looking at God, whom we don't see every day because we can't see him. He's invisible. So this is why this event is, it stretches our minds, and it stretches our effort to explain it. Well, what does it mean to see God? What does that even mean? Well, Peter, James, and John, whatever it was, they knew it was extraordinary. It was frightening, and yet it was also good. It is good for us to be here. We should stay here. This is a peak moment. Not only did they see Jesus shining like the sun, but they saw Moses and Elijah representing the whole tradition of God communicating to man. The law and the prophets. They're representative figures of the whole tradition. If Peter, James, and John went up on a mountain and saw Moses and Elijah, they would be stunned at this revelation of their whole religious tradition all at once. And that would be an extraordinary thing, but that's not what happened. Moses and Elijah are the supporting characters. They're not the main actor on the stage. What do they call that when they have the Academy Awards? There's the actor, and then there's the supporting actor, right? Supporting actor. Just losing the term for a moment. But that's what Moses and Elijah are. So all of a sudden, they're put in a relative position where before they were the supreme spokesmen of God. Now they are at the service of God himself, Jesus, God himself. And then the cloud, the voice says, "This is my beloved son," meaning that identifies who this shining figure is, and at the same time identifies his relationship with the voice. If this is the son, well, that speaker must be the father. The father doesn't say, "I'm the father." He says, "This is my son." And when we hear that, we realize who's speaking. So it's a revelation not only of the son, but of the father. Okay, now that's the first part. What happened? That's what happened. Well, the second part, why did this happen? What does this mean for us? And this would take a lifetime, because we're talking about a revelation of the very center of everything, center of our religion, center of time, history, the meaning of all things, suddenly, you know, a snapshot of the center of everything. But let's just take a few basic points. One thing is, this is a revelation of Jesus' true identity. No longer can Peter, James, and John think of him as a carpenter, or merely a carpenter, or merely an itinerant preacher, a rabbi. He no longer can fit into any categories that they had in their mind before. Now he surpasses, by far transcends anything they had in mind. This person, Jesus, is outside the realm of our natural world. He's the Son of the Father. He's the glorious Son of Man. And it even says, and Jesus even identifies himself as the Son of Man, as if he's referring to that passage from the prophet Daniel, the Son of Man. Who is this Son of Man? Well, this is who he is. It's Jesus of Nazareth, who is also the Son of the Father. So that's one thing. And that's maybe, that's more than enough to have the identity of Jesus on display here. But why does Jesus reveal himself, or allow himself to be revealed at this moment? When we celebrate, when we ponder the transfiguration in the season of Lent, which we always do, second Sunday of Lent, we know that it's part of the preparation for what is to come, Holy Week and Easter, that the Transfiguration gives the apostles and us the inspiration to persevere through the carrying of the cross to Calvary, knowing that the one who dies, who's dying, is already glorious. So that's in the context of Lent. But in the context of the month of August, we can say this is also a revelation of the itinerary of each human person. Yes, it reveals the identity of Jesus Christ, but it also reveals, this glory also reveals what God has in mind for us. And if you know the month of August, you know that the Transfiguration is connected to the Assumption. The glory of Jesus is not only for Jesus, but it is going to shine on the face and the glorified body of Mary. And Mary's not, she's unique, but she's not by herself. This is God's plan for every human person. He wants us to reign in glory. So, seeing Jesus here in glory gives us a strength to our faith that the one we're putting our faith in is really the one. But it's also a revelation of what it means to be incorporated into his body. What does it mean to be a Christian? The passage that comes to mind is that famous line from one of John's letters, John's first letter, where John says, right now we are children of God. What a great thing it is to be children of God. What we shall later be has not yet come to light, John says. What we shall later be has not yet come to light. But when it comes to light, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. That's prefigured on the mountain here. They see him as he is, and that the impact of seeing God as he is changes us. We will be like him, for we shall see him as he is. So that process starts on the mountain of the Transfiguration, but it's only a foretaste of the fullness of that Transfiguration that will take place in us as we pass through this life and into glory. So we have something to look forward to, seeing God as he is, the beatific vision. Seeing God as he is, not only is the ultimate fulfillment of all our desires, but it also has the effect of transfiguring us. It changes us to be like him, which is a mind-boggling idea. It stretches us beyond our capacity. But that's probably as far as we can go for now. What happened? Well, Jesus was transfigured on the mountain. Why did it happen? So that we can know him, so that our faith is strengthened, so that we can persevere in trials, and also so that we can look forward to seeing him face to face and to being transfigured by his glory, radiating to us and changing us.